Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm the site's managing editor, Matt Goldberg, and with me today is senior editor Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
Today we will be looking back at the year so far and looking ahead at what's to come, because we've hit the halfway point pretty much. I suppose we could wait till July 15th, but fuck that, I want to talk about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes when that comes along. So, because we didn't see Tammy or Deliver Us from Evil, we're going to talk about the year thus far. We're in the middle of 2014. Personally, I would say we're doing pretty well so far. I don't feel like this is a bust year by any stretch. Adam, what do you think?
It's been really good. I mean, it feels like there's been better blockbusters this year than, you know, recent history. I mean, usually it's always so hopeful in January when we're thinking of, you know, oh, look at all these movies are going to be so great, and then by July you've already seen the ones that have been disappointing or stinkers, and it's just kind of like, we have another month of this and who knows if it's going to be good or bad. But there have been some really good movies, I think, save for The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and, you know, obviously Transformers. The quote-unquote blockbusters have not been bad.
They really haven't. It's one of those things that's a pleasant surprise, for sure. I would also say that, like you said, usually a fatigue has set in. I think, for instance, for Pacific Rim, I think landing smack in the middle of July, first off, going up against Grown Ups was just unfortunate. Yes, it's different audiences, kind of. Like, Pacific Rim, I think, really would have appealed to the 12-year-old boys that instead wanted to go see deers pissing on people in Grown Ups 2. So it was a tough thing. But also, I think to this year, and I can't help but wonder, what if Godzilla had come out after Transformers? Would Godzilla have done as well?
I don't, and that's kind of in my thinking is that yes, this year's movies do seem to be better, but I think in terms of scheduling, it's gone perfect, like as perfect as it could be. Like Captain America, I guess if we want to call April setting things up, set it up pretty well. I wasn't as high on it as most people, but it certainly wasn't bad. And then you have Godzilla in May kind of kicking off the big summer blockbuster season, and that's a summer blockbuster that's not, it's a really atypical summer blockbuster. So the season didn't kick off with Transformers, where we knew what we were going to get, and here it is, you know, just onslaught of action and everything. It started really oddly with a quieter movie that was really built some great tension and stuff like that, and something that I would like to see much more of in other blockbusters. And then directly after that, you have X-Men Days of Future Past, which is a big time travel sci-fi movie. So I think that, you know, scheduling wise, the summer has led along in a way that has prevented us from feeling fatigue, because it didn't start off with, you know, again, save for Amazing Spider-Man 2, which was,
and
you
it's
know.
It's so funny, because I remember when we talked about Amazing Spider-Man 2, you were like, this is a movie we're going to forget about coming out, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep, like, the only reason I remember is because, like, oh, this is your May Kickstarter.
Yeah.
That's the one that it basically, it's only memorable because of a date, nothing in the movie itself.
No. And for the fact that it may have altered the course of the Spider-Man franchise going forward, because Sony has been very quiet with regards to their upcoming plans. Because, you know, Spider-Man 3 was supposed to, you know, start production late this year, or start pre-production late this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from Amazing Spider-Man, which also did not, like, blow up the world, they were like, no, we're hitting the ground running. Like, we're moving straight to 2 as fast as possible. And now they're like, pump your brakes, kid.
Yeah. It's just been radio silence, which I find so odd considering, and kind of ironic, because they had set up, like, we had not only announced release dates for Spider-Man 3, but also Spider-Man 4, and we also have the Sinister Six and Venom, and there's going to be one Spider-Man movie every year starting in 2015. And it's like, is that what's happening, Sony? Because I don't feel like a Spider-Man movie is coming out next year or in 2016.
And I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I am perfectly okay. Although I suppose, like, you know, maybe we go to Comic-Con and there's some, like, Venom test footage. And it'd be like, and the audience is like, maybe? Like, there are those diehard Venom fans. I've never really been that big of a fan of the character, but the problem with that whole franchise is, like, everything revolves around Spider-Man. It's not really a big world, and they're just sort of mining a very shallow well when you think about it. But that's a future problem, I would just say. So far, it's in terms of the first half of 2014, it's just debris. It's just Derridus just lying on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, even compare it to the films from early 2014, which usually is, you know, a barren July, January is a barren wasteland where you're gonna get a bunch of movies that are terrible. But then in February we had the Lego movie, 300 Rises of an Empire, which was, I thought, was pleasantly surprising. I didn't love it. It's nowhere near my top 10 of the year, but it was nowhere near as terrible as I thought it would be.
I did not care for it.
It
made like over 300 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't a flop.
And then Vampire Academy, which was a flop, but which was an interesting movie.
And I agree. I think the execution on that film was rough, but it was one of those things where, and I just caught it on DVD, but it was one of those films where I felt that I wish it had succeeded more, because I felt it was something where the world was interesting, it was well cast, and I would have liked them to sort of work out the kinks. It's almost like, you know, it's funny, like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is also a lot of botched execution, but it rides the success of the books.
Yeah.
And Vampire Academy doesn't have that, so it doesn't get more movies.
Yeah, yeah. And Vampire Academy was witty, and I mean, I was never bored. It was one of those movies that I wasn't looking forward to going to seeing, and I saw it, and I was like, this isn't terrible.
It's absolutely worth a Redbox rental. I'll say that right now.
You know
now. What's
not worth a Redbox rental? Need for Speed, which also came out in February.
I totally forgot about Need for Speed. Oh,
that
man.
I mean, as bad as Transformers is, that is the worst movie I've seen this year.
Really?
Yes. I hated that movie. Hated that movie.
Oh, man. I mean, Need for Speed is shorter.
Give
it that.
But it doesn't feel shorter.
It has Michael Keaton. It has Michael Keaton Michael making Keaton, an easy paycheck.
Yeah, he shot all of his scenes in half a day.
Pretty much in a single room. I don't know.
No sense.
It's pretty bad, and I'm not going to be like, which is worse, but I'll just agree. I would say up until Transformers, it was definitely a front runner for like worst of the year. Yeah, that was pretty bad. But we also got Noah in March.
We did.
Was cool. And that film, further proving I know shit about what people want in terms of box office, was a success. I thought that film would tank hard because the super religious people were like, no, it messes too much with the Bible. And then like the non-religious people were like, oh, it's too religious. And instead it's a hit. It was a hit.
Yeah. But oddly it feels like Noah or that Paramount was kind of like brushing it under the rug. Like it wasn't a massive hit, but it did fine. But you don't hear I haven't heard Paramount touting like the major success of Noah, and I don't know if that's a fact of they just wanted to like wash their hands of any controversy or anything that was going to happen.
I think the problem is like, well, it's not like we're going to make Noah 2.
Yeah.
So we may as well just it's like just about. Like I think that with Noah, it's just Paramount's like, it did better than expected. Let's move on because we have transformed. No, it's like we got a success. We pulled it out, thankfully. I don't know if they were sure of it, but it was a win. And sometimes you take a victory lap because you want to keep going. There's no way you make a sequel to Noah anyway, so you may as well just focus on the future of what your studio has coming up. And right now, that's Transformers, and now Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, we'll get to that later. But yeah, so again, there are these hits, and we haven't even gotten into the Sundance stuff yet. We haven't even gotten into indies. We're talking like the bigger movies.
Yeah, I mean, and even Divergent, which was I thought was going to be a major flop, did enough for Summit to greenlight 3 more sequels, and it was fine. I didn't love it. I mean, Shailene Woodley makes it enjoyable.
Yeah, even
it's
that.
Fine. It's just a fact. It's. The fact remains that we will be living through the rest of the series, whether you like it or not. It's probably going to happen.
I will say that I never thought this is going to be a weird statement. Divergent seems like Twilight without the personality. I'd love to hate Twilight, but Divergent, I don't even give a shit. it's just a franchise that's there and we have to do it.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen whether we want
to. The good thing about it though is that having read the other two books, and as terrible as the third book is, they're all very different. Like, no, you're not going to see the same story over and over again. Like, it changes the setting and like the stakes and the sci-fi-ness of it changes wildly from film to film. So
true, but we have Robert Klimke, director of RIPD, and writer Akiva Goldsman, writer and director of Winter's Tale, which I want to see so badly.
Yes.
But I want to see it with friends because it's supposed to be so astoundingly terrible that I want to see it with other people. I feel that's the only way to see it. But you take Insurgent, which I've heard is a weaker story than Divergent, and it's not like Divergent hit it out of the park. So you take a weaker story, not a good director, awful screenwriter, and you're like, come back next year. I'm like, I'm here because of my job. I'm here because of my job.
Yeah.
So and that shit gets to live on, whereas I wanted another Vampire Academy. So
yeah.
Their rise and fall. That being said, they didn't screen Vampire Academy for critics.
Nope,
which I thought
that
was
a mistake.
It was a mistake.
I saw plenty of love from critics online who had seen it after the fact, who didn't write a review because they didn't see the movie before it came out.
I mean, like, here's the thing. If they had even done, like, sort of a last-minute screening, like an 8 p.m. the night before it comes out, that would have at least been something.
Yeah.
Instead, what was really weird is we had promo screenings, but critics weren't invited to those.
They just had no confidence in it.
Weinstein Company botched it, which is unfortunate. And it's not like it was a bad time of the year. I think February was a good month for it. I just think, much like the film itself, the execution was shoddy.
Yes, there you go.
But I will say that when it comes to sci-fi, Divergent was at least better than Transcendence. Transcendence was a disappointment.
I equate that movie with a giant yawn. It's so
yeah. You want to
boring.
Talk about a film that's forgettable? Yes. I mean, it makes Amazing Spider-Man 2 look like a classic,
or like a riveting adventure.
It really does, full of thoughtful ideas. It's one of those things where I think Wally Fisker's a great cinematographer, but storytelling wise, that film is so flat. Do you remember when Johnny Depp was an exciting actor?
Yes.
Because I do.
Yes.
I remember he was like an underdog and you kind of rooted for the guy.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, there's this guy, Johnny Depp. And like, he needs, you know, he's in Donnie Brasco and he's, you know, he's kind of funny in Sleepy Hollow. And it's this guy you're rooting for. And now it's just like, he bought an island and he doesn't care.
I feel like it's the same thing as with Robert Downey Jr. And I think Robert Downey Jr. has made, a few more better choices than Johnny Depp now, but he doesn't feel as exciting or as dangerous as he used to. Not dangerous in the sense of like he's on drugs, what's he gonna do? But in the sense that like if he
taking
pops up
daring
in a,
projects.
Yeah, if he pops up in a movie, you have no idea what kind of performance you're gonna get.
Right. I think definitely he's kind of falling into the trap of I'm gonna play Robert Downey Jr. I'm gonna basically play Tony Stark in all my movies.
Yeah. Because he had that incredible string of like Singing Detective, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Good Night and Good Luck, Zodiac, which were all just, and then it culminated in Iron Man, and then
Tropic Thunder,
which were just so completely different roles and so exciting. And then, I mean, he does stuff like, God, I can't remember the Todd Phillips movie, Due Date, which was just felt.
I mean,
weird.
Due Date is
it's
something,
fine. And that's
it's
the thing
fine,
is his movies
but it,
since then aren't terrible. They're just fine. Like I can't work up any enthusiasm for the Sherlock Holmes movies. They're just fine.
Yeah, and I can't even quite honestly. My enthusiasm for The Judge comes from Robert Duvall.
Yeah,
because he's just consistently great all the time. Just we all like if you want a career, man. If you're like an actor looking for a career to emulate that you'd be envious of, fucking Robert Duvall, legend. And that movie at least is a curiosity because it's David Dobkin and it's a drama
and it's also Downey's first movie from his own production shingle. So he has even more creative control this time than he does on his other sets.
So what is he going to do? You know, is it going to be? I got to say, the trailer made it look a little maudlin.
Yeah,
a little something like that.
We'll get to that in our look forward.
We'll get to that. We're not there yet. No, we're still in the first half. So Transcendence sucked.
Yes,
it did.
So did Amazing Spider-Man 2.
So did Amazing Spider-Man 2. But again, it's not a total wash, and we're just gonna. I'm sorry, I have this cough right now, people. But in terms of big films, a pretty good mix. You know, we had Captain America, and
Neighbors. I would say was a big film.
Neighbors,
that was a giant.
Now that's
success.
Weird. I feel like I forgot about Neighbors, but that was really good. And I think the reason I forgot about Neighbors isn't because I dislike the film. It's because when I think of my summer comedy now, it's 22 Jump Street. That thing just overshadows everything. Not to discredit Neighbors.
See, I feel like the thing that overshadows, or the thing that is overshadowed, if anything, is A Million Ways to Die in the West, which I feel like looking from January looking on, it's like that's the slam dunk comedy of the year. Neighbors, who knows if people are going to turn out for Seth Rogen again, because, you know, people can be wishy-washy on him. And then 22 Jump Street, comedy sequels are very hard to make. But then it turns out that A Million Ways to Die in the West is the one that completely bombs, and the Neighbors and 22 Jump Street are massive successes.
Yeah, I mean, I still... It was one of those... A Million Ways to Die in the West, man. So many of you are like, it's not funny. And I just, like... I enjoyed it. I laughed.
You enjoy Neil Patrick Harris shitting into a hat.
That was so great! Because it's one of... I'll tell you why it's great. That joke works because, A, it does the thing I like where the joke goes on so long that it becomes funny. And, two, the way he does... I mean, just Neil Patrick Harris can pretty much do anything. And where he's, like, just... He just keeps reaching for that, like, this feeble grasp until he finally gets it. There's no dialogue. He doesn't, like, say, give me the hat. It's just this childlike reach for it. And also, I think poop is funny in the right context. I know it's immature, but I laughed at Milo, or Bad Milo, for those who saw it. And for those who didn't, it's about a demon that lives in Ken Marino's colon. And I thought that was really funny. So, I have certain tastes, I understand, when it comes to comedy.
You liked A Million Ways to Die in the West. I did laugh.
I didn't love A Million Ways to Die in the West. I didn't love it, but I didn't. I just didn't hate it. I wasn't like, grump, this is not funny. And multiple people was like, I did not laugh once. I'm like, that is unfortunate. But you're right. It did. I mean, Universal was just like, oh, Seth, whatever the fuck you want to do. Ted is huge. Whatever you want to do. And the thing is you would think like, okay, he has the Ted audience. And every ad for A Million Ways to Die in the West reminded you that it was from the creator of Ted.
Yeah.
And also the creator of Family Guy. And then, so you would think that goodwill, and it just tanked. It just tanked outright.
I was surprised.
And so, you know, does that mean, I don't know what that means for Ted 2.
Ted 2 is still fine.
I think it
really
will do
the major
fine,
problem
but...
with A Million Ways to Die in the West was Seth MacFarlane playing the lead. I just thought he was so bland and so self-conscious. Like, he didn't want to look like a fool. And so there was some...
Yeah, he's the guy that wanted to snipe at everyone, but he didn't want to be self-deprecating.
Yeah, and so it just kind of, you know, he had to be... He was playing like a down-on-his-luck schmuck guy, but he's a good-looking guy. Like, it was hard to buy into that. So I think that was maybe one of the bigger problems of it. And so much of it felt jokey. Like, the jokes felt jokey. They didn't feel organic in that movie.
Well, that's just MacFarlane.
Yeah.
That's... Inorganic jokes are his trademark. If you look at Family Guy, it's just whatever I can get, I will go for. Which, and again, that's a hit and miss rate. I mean, that's you open yourself up to a lot of hit and miss. For me, it hit. For others, I understand. But yeah, that to me was one of the surprise flops of the year, for sure. So yeah, that was that.
Neighbors was huge, though. I mean,
I was
surprised at that because I thought it would do fine, but I feel like Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have hit. They've struck gold. They figured out what they can do with This Is the End. And they've said in interviews numerous times that they realized on the Green Hornet that when you have a $100 million budget, that comes with so much more studio oversight, so much more meddling and compromising a vision. So, and it took them years to get Neighbors made, but the key in getting Neighbors made was saying, all right, we're slashing the budget in half. And then Universal was basically like, all right, we'll make whatever you want then. They slashed the budget, got Zac Efron, and did whatever they wanted. And I feel like now with that...
And Nicholas Stoller really stepped up.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I think visually it's Nicholas Stoller's best film. I still... Forgetting Sarah Marshall is still one of my favorite comedies of the past decade, but visually it was fantastic and everything.
And it moved at a good clip. I think cutting the budget and also keeping it small, because I didn't know they cut the budget in half, but that makes total sense. Looking back on the film, it's like this film basically takes place in two houses.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. But yeah, it works. And then it's just a bunch of gags between there and just letting the characters carry it. And also just, you know, Rose Byrne really building on all the good stuff we saw from her in Bridesmaids and people who have yet to see I Give It a Year. And then Zac Efron just crushing it. You know, one of my favorite lines of the year is just his delivery of, it was when Dave Franco, who is also great in the film. He's like, well, why don't you just put it on the wall? And just Zac Efron goes, because I didn't earn it.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's, yeah, Neighbors was a lot of fun, and now I'm feeling guilty about stuff I forgot. But we see so many movies.
We do, yeah.
We see so many that it's easy. I'm basically making excuses for like, yeah, I love that film, but I don't remember it. But there's so much, and I'm sure I'll go back at the end of the year. But I mean, at a film festival alone, seeing what I think I saw 25 this year, 24 in a shorter span of time than we weren't at Sundance for as long as we normally are, but ton of movies there, and I only remember the two or three I absolutely loved, which were Boyhood, Calvary, and the EPA. The EPA and EPA. Well, no, but I remember, like, I can remember, like, I thought, I thought They Came Together was funny, and I just rewatched it, and it held up pretty well.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But then there were others that just were disappointments, and now they faded from memory,
Sure, and some of those are coming out later this year. Some are coming out, like, 4 years from now when they're dumped by whatever studio.
Yeah, when are we seeing The Voices?
The Voices. The Voices is one of my favorites at Sundance. It's super weird, super genre, but it's fantastic.
Right.
I know it got distribution, so
it did get distribution. So
I just hope they don't mess with it too much, because it is not. It is a hard pill to swallow.
And that's the thing about in terms of messing with films. I still don't know if they messed with What If, which when we saw it was the F word, and I remember it being raunchy, but I don't know if it was R-rated, because the film is being released as PG-13.
Yeah.
And I don't remember it being PG-13.
I heard the cut we saw was R. I don't remember it that much. And I guess it's a good thing that I'm not, like, that the language and the raunchiness wasn't as so striking as to impose on that's necessary for the film to succeed. But I guess we'll see with the PG-13 version.
Right. I'm still interested in seeing it again. But before we get to those indies, let's talk about the indies of the first half. Because we haven't really touched on those.
Yeah, there were yet. Great ones.
There were. There were plenty of smaller films that, eventually have, that it's good to see them succeed.
I mean, Grand Budapest Hotel, again, Wes Anderson continues to find, like, hone in on his thing, whatever his, like, specialty is, and it's glorious to see him do that. And I thought Grand Budapest Hotel was great. I didn't love it as much as Moonrise Kingdom, but I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I love the confidence of Grand Budapest Hotel because it's like, this is my most Wes Anderson-y film yet, but I'm totally in my fucking element.
Yeah, he's in control. It doesn't feel like, I think Life Aquatic is the one that feels the most like he's searching for to put his a finger on what his pulse is and what he's doing.
I think Life Aquatic is very good. That being said, I haven't seen it since it was in theaters, but I bought it on that Criterion sale at Barnes and Nobles. But the what I remember when I saw it is I really liked it, but I'm like, okay, you can't make any more Bad Dads films. Mm-hmm. And then Darjeeling to me is like Wes Anderson in the wilderness, like really trying to find like what can I do? What's next for me?
Yeah. And I like Darjeeling.
Yeah, I need to watch that again.
And most people don't, but I liked it.
Well, I mean, it's not
really... It's an odd film.
It's a half-Bad Dad's film.
Yeah.
The dad
yeah.
isn't on screen. And, again, to me, it's sort of it's an uneven film, but it's an interesting film. And then, you know, I think ever since Fantastic Mr. Fox, he's been on a roll.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And then another movie that came out in March that I loved... that is probably the weirdest and will be the weirdest movie that I see all year was Enemy by Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, man. I mean, Enemy, like...
It's a weird movie.
Here's the thing. I was with Enemy until the very end.
You didn't
I was with it until the very end, and that final shot was
Baloney.
John Peters approved. That's all I'll say about it.
I loved it. It's so weird.
No, I mean, a lot of people did.
I feel like there's so much more to unpack in that movie. And for every like person who comes out to me and raves about Prisoners, I'm like, have you seen Enemy? You need to go see Enemy.
Have you seen Enemy? Goes, you know what? I haven't seen Encendies, which is Canadian. Have you seen it?
I have not seen that.
Not a true Villeneuve fan then.
I saw Prisoners and I was like, it was all right. I wasn't crazy about it. But
yeah, to me, Prisoners is like, the only thing I remember about Prisoners is Roger Deakins' cinematography. To me, that he's the real star of the movie.
Yeah. Did you see, you saw Under the Skin, correct?
I did see Under the Skin.
I have not.
A lot of people liked it. I thought it was ironically superficial. I think it's not as deep as it pretends to be.
Okay.
That was my assessment. A lot of people loved it. It's
yeah,
definitely a weird movie.
I'm curious to see it.
It's a weird film, for sure. I think Jonathan Glazer, I think it's earnest. I don't think he's trying to be, I don't think it's pretentious, per se. But I will say that I think it does a lot for a little out of it.
Okay.
But that's my feeling. By the way, I'm going back through the previous months, and I totally forgot that Monuments Men was a huge disappointment.
Yeah, that was not great.
That's definitely one of the big disappointments of the year for me.
Yeah, same here.
It
was fine. What I will say, my favorite movie of the year so far, discounting movies I saw at Sundance, because Boyhood is number
one. Yeah, Boyhood is currently the champ.
Yeah, but my favorite movie I've seen in theaters this year is another indie, and it's Locke. I loved the hell out of Locke.
See it at Sundance.
No,
that's right. You were seeing A Most Wanted Man.
Yeah, because it was at TIFF, and I was like, if something's played at TIFF and it's playing again at Sundance, I'm going to spend my time seeing something that's first playing at Sundance.
I totally forgot.
So I was like, oh, I'll see Locke later. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, this will be interesting.
I miss Locke at TIFF? Oh, man.
Yeah.
I guess it must have been that TIFF's crazy TIFF scheduling, because I totally would have seen it.
Yeah, there were a lot of movies at TIFF. But, it's Tom Hardy in a car for the entire movie. I was like, this will be interesting, but I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
It redefined the way I say concrete.
Yes, concrete.
I went to see it again. By the way, it holds up on repeat viewing. In fact, I may have liked it even a little more. I went to go see it when it was in theaters. And just, it's so filled with so many great little moments. Like, when his employee and they're talking, everything happens over the phone, and they're talking, it's like, well, can I use C5? And just the look on Tom Hardy's face, he's so pissed off. He's like, no, you have to use C6. What does it say on all the forms? C6? So no, you can't use C5. You have to use C6.
His intonation in that movie is so crazy.
Oh, I love it. I love his accent in that film.
And the fact that they shot it, I didn't know this. They shot it in 6 days, but I figured they'd shoot it in chunks. But he got in the car and he performed the entire movie all the way through when they shot it. They'd do it twice every night. And the people on the other end of the phone were in a hotel room calling in. So they would shoot it like a play. Like he would shoot the whole thing through. So Tom Hardy had all those lines down lockstep as he drove.
And he was actually sick.
Yeah.
They just incorporated it into the film.
Yeah. That's fantastic. What's your favorite of the year that you've seen so far in theaters?
That's not Boyhood.
Yeah, that's not
It's not Boyhood.
That's what I meant by in theaters, quote unquote.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Now I just feel like this year is shit. Now looking back on it, I can't think of anything. I would probably say, probably Grand Budapest. I'd say Grand Budapest or Captain America. Those are off the top of my head. And the thing is like, oh shit, no, but the Lego movie is all, fuck, the Lego movie's in the mix. God damn it. That's the thing. It's just, I see so
It's
much.
hard.
And I just rewatched the Lego movie because I got the Blu-ray. And the commentary track is really fun. Oh man, it's so tough. Cause, and quite honestly, Boyhood just overshadows everything
It does, and
because.
that's why I have to kind of discount it. I'm like,
And
oh,
that's,
wait,
yeah, you have to,
like.
like, without. Because here's the thing about Boyhood. I would be shocked if it has to. I cannot imagine it not being in my top 10.
Yeah,
I
same.
can't imagine, like, there are 10 movies that are just going to blow it out of the water.
I don't know. The Hobbit, the Battle of Five Armies is coming out.
That's true. There are five armies. If they only had four, three or four, it wouldn't be good. But five armies? Fuck. And they've been so good thus far.
You've all been so good.
Yeah. So boy, but yeah, no, I mean, first half, Lego Movie, Grand Budapest, Captain America, 22 Jump Street, also fantastic.
I loved How to Train Your Dragon 2. That's probably going to be in my top 10. I know you didn't like
Yeah.
it as much, but
Right.
Obvious Child is probably my second favorite that I've seen in theaters this year.
I
I
haven't
love
seen Obvious Child. See,
that's
that's
another
the
one that was like not expecting. I was expecting it to be a nice little indie, but I thought it was really affecting. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, Snowpiercer's really great.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I need to see Snowpiercer. I've not seen that.
So.
I enjoyed Fault in Our Stars. I didn't love Fault in Our Stars, but that's another. And kind of going back to the whole scheduling of the summer thing, like that was another movie that broke up the monotony. Like right in the beginning of June, when you usually feel the onslaught of the blockbusters, which we haven't even talked about Edge of Tomorrow, which I think is the best blockbuster of the summer or
Fuck,
the
I
year.
forgot Edge of
Yeah, Edge of
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow is great too. But it kind of, you had that jolt of just like a small scale, like character driven movie. And it's probably not as good as some of the more like the Sundance movies. But I mean, I felt like it was a nice refresher, and it's made the summer not feel as monotonous as it usually does.
If you want to hear some sad shit, I'm going through the schedule now. Film I forgot that I really enjoyed, but I forgot about it. The Raid 2. And I'm quoted on the goddamn poster.
I have not seen the Raid 2.
The Raid 2. I thought it was great. I do think it's a little too long. I just think, but action-wise, I stick to my guns. It is based on the set pieces. It's one of the greatest action films ever made. They left the based on the set pieces part out of the blurb. But I mean, it is great. There's been that's and the thing is like for me, yes, I'm forgetting a bunch of films, but then when I go back and start racking them up, I'm like, there's been a lot of consistently good stuff. There hasn't been really a stretch of disappointment for me.
No, there hasn't, because they're always like, I think in May when we were starting to maybe like, Blended was coming out, and
Blended.
we were, had Maleficent coming out, then there was Edge of Tomorrow, and it was like, whoa, like this is a summer blockbuster that's not, that's again hot on the heels of Godzilla, a weird, like different summer blockbuster. That was so much fun.
Right. And the thing is like, now I will say, I think Captain America tided me over through April. April, I think, has been the weakest month because it's been great with the indies, but from a mainstream, like, here are the films, the wide release films that aren't Captain America in April. Draft Day, Oculus, Rio 2. Although I heard good things about Oculus. Bears. Haunted House 2, Heaven is for Real, Transcendence, Brick Mansions, or How to Trade In on Paul Walker's Death, The Other Woman, and The Quiet Ones.
Yeah, that's not a strong month.
That's not a strong month. But if you look at the indies, you have, what do you have? You have Joe, you have Locke, you have a lot of people liked Under the Skin. You have Only Lovers Left Alive, which other people liked. I haven't seen it because I'm just not a Jim Jarmusch guy. And you had Blue Ruin, which is great. So there was like good stuff like throughout
Yeah.
April, but in playing in a smaller theater or VOD. So again, I don't think we've really had just like a long kill me dry spell.
Not yet. Don't
That
speak too
being said, I
soon.
have no idea how we. I need to look back at our April shows. I have no idea what we talked about.
Yeah, can't remember.
If we didn't talk, I mean, if we talked about Captain America and then looking at all those, I mean, we talked about Transcendence, but fuck me. I certainly didn't see brick mansions.
No.
No. So
August looks pretty rough, other than Guardians of the Galaxy as far as wide releases go.
Yeah, let's start looking ahead now.
Yeah,
you've looked behind. Wide releases. So before we finish, let's just talk July before we get to August.
Sure.
July, Boyhood comes out July 11th. Start looking at it and start looking for it at a theater near you. If you live in Atlanta, it'll start playing on August 1st at the Landmark Midtown Art. Go see it. So this is the film we're just gonna keep talking about.
Yeah,
Boyhood. But I'm really excited for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, especially after like people were raving about it on Twitter.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So that's.
And I'm a Matt Reeves fan, so I'm interested to see what he does with this kind of sci-fi actioner.
Yeah, and I've been rewatching the Apes film, so now I'm even. I keep getting now that I've seen four of them. Well, six. I've seen all of the Planet of the Apes films except Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which I'm watching later today. And I've gotten really invested in them now. Like, I'm more invested in the Apes franchise than I was before, so now I'm even more excited for Dawn, because I've liked all the trailers as well. I'm apparently, I'll say this on the podcast, I will tell people now, and fuck it, I don't think anyone will get too mad at me. The Purge Anarchy is good. I saw it a couple months ago. It's a good movie. I liked it much more than The Purge. It's a straight action film, so I don't know if it'll have the same sleeper success as The Purge, but I hope people go see it, because I think it's a much tighter, far more focused film. It's basically a fourth Punisher movie. You watch this film, it's like, why isn't Frank Grillo just playing the Punisher straight up? He should be the Punisher. Like, if you just imagine a giant skull on his on his shirt for the movie, it's like, oh, it's a Punisher movie. That's it, and that's great. So, Purge Anarchy is good. I am looking forward to Sex Tape. I took a lot of shit for that. First off, I think the trailers have been funny, but more so, I was pleasantly surprised by Bad Teacher, and that looked way worse.
I didn't really like Bad Teacher, and I have not been enthused by the trailers for Sex Tape. I was enthused by the prospect of Sex Tape, but the trailers have not looked great. That said, I will definitely go see it, because I like Jason Segel. I like Jay Kasdan. I think Cameron Diaz is a good comedic actress.
See, I like Jay Kasdan too, and I quite honestly, that Walk Hard goodwill is going to go for a while.
Yeah, and it also has Rob Lowe, so come on.
Yeah.
Gotta see it.
For sure. And, hey, if you want to talk about Walk Hard, man, looking ahead to Get On Up. That's just more Walk Hard fodder.
It's adapted from Walk Hard, it looks like.
It really is.
Hercules,
yeah.
Is anyone excited for Hercules?
Oh, man, I forgot Hercules.
Is there a single?
No, it's Brett Ratner, and quite honestly, I think Dwayne Johnson only works in certain... Like, I think Dwayne Johnson has so much charisma, but it's not like all of his films are hits.
Yeah.
They're not all winners. And you could say that about anyone, but it's one of those things where, like, Hercules, it's like, this is the start of a franchise. And I'm like, no, it's not.
No.
It doesn't look that way. It doesn't look that way. Instead, I would go for Dwayne Johnson, what he has called himself, which is franchise Viagra.
Yeah.
So he comes into a franchise that's stalling, like G.I. Joe or Fast and Furious, and comes in and like, oh, yeah, all right. But starting out from nothing, from Hercules. By the way, do you remember for this Hercules, it's like, it's going to be like a gritty, realistic Hercules. And then you see the trailer and there's a fucking Hydra in it.
Well, and it also like just aesthetically looks like a Jose Cuervo commercial. Because Brett Ratner just wants everything to be great. So you have like sexy models and like they're up in their garb and like nothing has any like grit or anything to it. It just looks like a television commercial just shot on like the flattest digital camera he could find.
Yeah.
And it also makes The Rock's fake beard look even faker. So.
Yeah.
And I love Dwayne Johnson. I think he's fantastic.
I love Dwayne Johnson too. I just don't think this is I think that, let me put it this way. We've already had a Hercules movie this year.
Yeah.
With Kellan Lutz. Damn it, Lutz.
Damn it.
And
Blimpy.
I knew you were going to say that, and God bless you for it. So, yeah, I don't think people are, like, super hard. It's like, man, I love Hercules. Man, people weren't even that excited for Pompeii, which is another sword and sandals film.
Yeah.
Do you remember that Pompeii came out? I just did.
Barely.
Barely. Barely remembered it. I am interested in Lucy.
Yeah.
I think it could go either way, but I'm kind of hoping it's Luc Besson in that sort of... La Femme Fatale No, I'm sorry, not La Femme. La Femme Nikita.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the name of the movie.
I think it's fine. And Magic in the Moonlight comes out in limited release the same weekend. And
I'm not as excited for Magic in the Moonlight as I thought. Like, considering the cast and Woody Allen, I just. It's one of those things where. But then again, Woody Allen, you look at his movie. I don't know. Do
it's
you ever
hit
get
miss.
Really,
I mean.
It's so hit and miss, but when it's a hit lately, it's been a hit. Like, Blue Jasmine, I was like, eh, whatever. And then everyone's like, Kate Blanchett will blow your fucking mind in Blue Jasmine. And she did.
Yes.
So it's going to be one of those things. With Magic in the Moonlight, like, I will definitely show up for it. I'm interested, but I'm not like, yeah, another Woody Allen film. Fuck yeah.
It does. It feels more like his earlier, like, you know, weaving in those supernatural elements possibly or something like that. It feels more of like a kookier script than the recent, like, you know,
then
like you said, Blue Jasmine or even Midnight in Paris, which was felt different for him.
Yeah, Midnight in Paris has that supernatural aspect.
It does, but it felt in it like in a, it felt like it was done in a different way, but
true.
But I'll see it.
So now let's head into August.
Yes.
Where I am excited for Guardians.
I am
very
excited
for
Guardians.
Not excited for Get On Up.
No.
I think Chadwick Boseman has a very bright future, but I think this is just this looks like it's playing so close to the cliched music biopic.
Yes.
And
it's hitting it hits every single one of those beats in the trailer. Like, every single Walk Hard beat is in that trailer.
I really did, watching that trailer, I expected him to start ripping sinks off the wall.
Yes, or the wrong kid to die.
The wrong kid died. See, if you haven't seen Walk Hard, listeners, go see Walk Hard. You will fucking love it. And if you don't, you're a communist. I just called a bunch of people communists for no reason.
Yeah, that's probably
okay. Right. Moving on to August 8th. The 100-Foot Journey could be like maybe this year's Grand Budapest. Not Grand Budapest. Grand Exotic Marigold Hotel.
The best exotic.
Who gives a shit? That movie that your grandma liked.
I liked
Let's
that
just call
movie.
It that. That,
that
movie,
movie
that your
fine.
Grandma liked.
That movie
with
was
Judi
fine.
Dench.
It was pleasant.
It is. And
it's
this could
a
be
pleasant
a
movie.
Pleasant movie.
It
a
does.
Nice movie. Yeah, I, you know, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Pause. Correct.
Yes.
That is a nice movie. It's a nice movie. So maybe that's, judging from the trailer for 100 Foot Journey, it looks like a nice movie.
Yes.
So the Into the Storm looks awful.
Yeah, looks, and as someone who lives in Oklahoma in tornado territory, it's just not cool. Like,
it doesn't look like
clearly,
it doesn't look
clearly this movie was greenlit after the Moore tornadoes. That was the reason that it was greenlit. Why is that something to be proud of? To be like, hey, look at all this destruction of things that kill people just after all those people died.
It's
fun.
Yeah, I'll say two things on that, on Into the Storm. First, it's not like Twister, because Twister is just like, this is a straight-up action movie from the director of Speed with big movie stars. It, like, there's a cow that flies by. Like, it lets you know it's a silly movie. Like, it's intense, but it doesn't feel exploitative.
It doesn't take itself too seriously.
Exactly, and that's so key, whereas this looks so serious. And if you're going to play it that way, what if I told you, it's like, and now there's going to be a hurricane movie? Would you be cool with that? It's like, we're going to make a hurricane film, and, like, going into, like, that just, no, because you just associate bad, this is natural disasters in a way that isn't fun. It's just like, man, I really, like, and the thing is I guess you can make those kind of movies as a drama, but, like, this is like an action movie. Like, isn't there like a tornado that's on fire in Into the Storm? Is that in the trailer?
I think so. I don't know.
There probably is. It really looks like a visual effects company just got a budget and, like, what can we do with tornadoes? And it's one of those films where you almost feel like at the junket, everyone will tell you about how realistic they made it. They wanted to make the tornadoes look like that was that was their
those will be the
main
points.
Priority. Like, man, I hope those tornadoes look real, because that's why I go to movies, real looking tornadoes. And then the one I think that's gonna hurt a little bit is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm not super invested in the film, but I was a huge fan when I was a kid, and I'm not nostalgic for it, but it looks way worse than it should.
See, I loved the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid, but I don't think there's a movie I've been more indifferent towards in a long time. I just do
yeah,
not care.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's the thing.
I saw
I
the trailer.
Feel angry for it. I just
no.
I'm like, no.
Well, and the thing when I saw the recent trailer,
why do they have lips?
Well, in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there's no way to make it gritty and make it good, so just make it for kids. But the trailer has, like, goofy dialogue, but then it looks like a Transformers movie, and that, see, like, disconnect makes me think, who is the audience for this kind of movie? Like, how is that something that's palatable? Because it's going to skew, the dialogue and the goofiness is going to skew too young for the Transformers crowd, and then the gritty realism is going to skew too old for the kids who like the goofy stuff.
But that's the, I think, and that's, but that's the, as we talked about it last week, that's the exact same formula that works for Transformer, which is you appeal to men children.
Oh, yeah.
But
I guess
I don't
it's for
think,
men children.
True, but I don't think Turtles is big enough.
No,
that it's just, and also you really only get one of those per summer.
Yeah.
You can't release another one like a month later. You can't. It's just too much. And I would also say it looks like the gritty realism is working against it in a way that before you just don't think about, like, why would turtles wear masks? It's like no one knows who they are anyway. But when you put it realistically, it's like, why do they wear masks? Like, now you're judging it on different terms because the context has changed in a way that I don't think is for the better.
Yeah, so.
Bring back the animatronics. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
I need to read The Giver.
Never read The Giver as a kid?
That's what I keep getting. Yeah, it was a book I kept picking up and I couldn't get into it, but I wasn't. For whatever one reason or another, I'm sure it's a book I could read in a day.
Well, and the thing is, I've read The Giver, and everyone I know who's read The Giver read it in elementary school, and we all saw the trailer and we were like, do I need to read The Giver again? Because in the book, and I haven't read it since elementary school, but it is not a futuristic sci-fi landscape. It's more like it's a dystopian future, but it's like a, not a Wild West, but like the Giver lives in like a log cabin, as it kind of like, think of like The Village is kind of how I pictured it. And yeah. So it's so clear that they're cashing in on the Hunger Games stuff. But what's ironic about it is that Lois Lowry wrote The Giver before all of this YA futuristic dystopia.
And Jeff Bridges has been on board for decades.
Yeah. And I think
originally he wanted to play the kid, and Lloyd Bridges, his father, was going to play the Giver.
Yeah. And I just feel like it's going to hurt it because everyone's going to be like, oh, what's this Hunger Games drip up? And it's like, oh, this is actually the book that inspired all the shit that you read now. So, you know.
Or as we can call it now, John Carter syndrome.
Yes. But what's sad about it is it feels like the movie version has been so skewed heavily towards the Hunger Games crowd that it may not resemble, again, I haven't read the book in a long time, but I don't feel like it resembles the world of the book as closely. So in my feeling, it looks like it's trying too hard to get that Hunger Games audience, so it's just going to come off as a ripoff, which is sad.
Right. Yeah, because what you probably do there is all the Hunger Games fans, like the today's
Hunger
kids,
Games
like
are good books.
They can
I'm
smell
not...
it as, yeah. No, it's fine, but they can smell something that's phony, and then you just end up alienating all the people who were fans of the book.
Yeah.
So you're appealing to nobody.
Exactly.
There's also The Expendables 3. I do not care about The Expendables
franchise. I have never
franchise.
Seen an Expendables movie, and I hope to continue that tradition this year.
Yeah, I saw The Expendables. I saw Expendables in theaters, thought it was crap. Saw Expendables 2 on Netflix, thought it was fine. I just feel like those films are fan service incarnate. That's all they are. It's like, oh, I like all these action stars. Do you need a plot? Not really. I just want to see them blow shit up. Okay, well then.
See them talk to each other.
I just want to see the effects of HGH on Sylvester Stallone. That's just what I show up for. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
I was really excited for this movie in 2007, 2005.
It's like that
when
Onion
that?
Joke. The first one came out in 2005.
Yeah, so it was like 2006. I was like, man, I can't wait for Sin City 2.
Yeah, it reminds me of that Onion joke where it's like, The Internship is the hit film of 2010.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's just, and again, this is one of those things, like, you stuff it with stars, and I don't know if that draws, I mean, Machete Kills is stuffed with actors that are recognizable. It's just, Robert Rodriguez films seem to be powered by stunt casting. It's like, oh man, I want to see this, because it has actors I like, but there's just nothing about it that, again, I think it feels, it's like what you're saying, it had this film come out 7 years ago, it would be a different story, but as it stands now, Also, though, if it had come out 7 years ago, it probably wouldn't star Josh Brolin. So, you know, give and take, but I'm not really excited for it at all. It's just a film that exists, and I can understand now why they delayed it almost a year.
Yeah, they pushed it a whole year. That was crazy.
Yeah. As Above, So Below. That could be fine.
Sure.
It could be. A nice little found footage film. I don't feel like we've been inundated with those this year.
No. Is Jezebel the Conjuring spinoff, or am I remembering that wrong? We haven't seen anything from Jezebel. It's a Lionsgate film. I know it's coming out, but I don't really know what it is. Oh, maybe we did. I think we did see a trailer for it. I think it looked all right. I think it was like about in like a cabin. There's like a...
In the woods.
Yeah, it's like a cabin in the wood and a dead girl's mom. Yeah, we did cover a trailer for it. It looked all right. It doesn't look bad. It looks
okay,
like
I haven't watched the trailer, but because I'm not that much of a horror guy, he said, as he just recommended As Above, So Below.
Jezebel looked fine.
Yeah, but here's the this is the thing. August, are we that excited for anything? It's sort
just
of
like Guardians of the Galaxy comes out, and they're like, "All right, back to school, kids." Like you're
pretty much.
We're
it's
done.
Like yeah,
done
it's
here.
Pretty much. That's really what it is. I think you nailed it. All right, September. Moving on to September. Boy,
not
how. Oh, by the way, in August. Oh, one more thing. The Congress comes out at the end of August into limited release. It's really good. You should see it. It's from the same director as Waltz with Bashir. It's a really weird, trippy film. It's really weird, but it's great. You should see it. The Green Inferno is getting a wide release. Holy shit. That film, I mean, it's just all I've heard about it is it's gory beyond all reason because it's Eli Roth, and that's kind of all he knows how to do.
A lot of horror this year, feels like.
It is. There is a fair amount of horror, which is good for those fans, assuming those movies are good, but at least they're being serviced in some way. But you know what I needed to see in IMAX, Adam?
What?
Forrest Gump.
He's running so big.
There are films that have been re-released in IMAX. I'm like, that's a good idea. That's cool. And then Forrest Gump. It's like I get it. It's the 20th anniversary of the film.
Yeah.
But this is one step shy of releasing the movie in 3D. I feel like Forrest is running right at me. You can really feel the baby boomers.
And how are those CG effects going to stand up on a giant IMAX screen? Like when Forrest is, you know, like shaking JFK's hand. Not
that
JFK,
is an...
no. I can't remember.
LBJ.
LBJ, yeah.
And then he shows them we got shot in the buttocks.
Yeah. That's a weird thing, but it'll make a lot of money. So that's all you need to know about it.
Yeah, that's true. I'm wondering why they're not re-releasing Pulp Fiction. It seemed like a thing that would make more sense. I bet those
rights are tangled to hell.
That's true.
Miramax.
Although, didn't Weinstein reclaim Miramax rights? And they're like, now we're going to make sequels to fucking everything. That Shakespeare in Love 2 film you never wanted.
It's never going to happen. They were talking about it for like 5 years.
And everyone is okay with
that
movie.
I think it was just a ploy for them to get the rights back or something.
For sure.
But the second half of September doesn't look bad.
I mean, The Maze Runner, I'm not really interested in because someone spoiled the ending for me.
That sucks. It looks all right. I've read This Is Where I Leave You. It's good. It's not a great book, but it's
here's
fun.
The thing here about This Is Where I Leave You. Great cast.
Fantastic cast.
Sean Levy's directing, and I can't get on board with that.
See, I think the story is kind of amenable to that, and that's why I'm interested to see it, because he's never done like a straight drama before, and it is more dramatic than comedic, and so I'm curious to see, and it has Adam Driver, so you know
True.
You're going to get your money's worth with Adam Driver support.
But I don't know how it's amenable to him, because it's not like, oh man, his comedies would like be so much better if they weren't so dramatic. No, they'd be so much better if they weren't poorly directed.
Well,
that's their problem.
I'll say I'm curious to see how he does. As someone who enjoyed the book, I am optimistic that
so because he's working.
It's good.
Your argument is he's working from strong source material as opposed to like Night at the Museum.
Strong source material, and I also think that he's hungry because you remember a few years ago after Real Steel, he was like the hot director. He was attached to like Frankenstein, and he was going to do Fantastic Voyage, and then all of those fell apart. And I'm not exactly sure why, but he didn't. It felt like. He wasn't in the doghouse, but he didn't get to do like
the heat died off and there was nowhere for him to go.
Yeah, and so he went back. He did the internship that didn't do well, and so he's back doing Night at Museum 3. But this feels like a movie that he was hungry to do, or a movie that stuff on, and so I'm interested to see how that turns out.
Sure. The Guest is a film that's sort of flying under the radar, but if you liked Your Next and you like the sort of 80s films of John Carpenter, totally seek it out. Also, if you want to see Matthew Crowley just be insane, that's also a benefit.
And also that weekend in limited release is The Skeleton Twins, which is the drama, quote-unquote drama, with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, which is actually more funny than you're expecting, but also very dramatic, and Bill Hader is fantastic in it. I would not be surprised to see Roadside do a small awards push for him in that movie.
That would be great.
Yeah, he's really, really good in it. And he plays a gay character, which you would think, like, oh, it's going to be Stefan, like, here it goes, and he toes that line so well of not verging into parody or verging into, like, you know, you think you're going to go in thinking of Stefan the whole time, but not at all. He's really great.
Yeah. Box Trolls, looking forward to Box Trolls.
Yeah,
you've been saying that before. Laika, we're going to show up for your movies.
Yes,
that's it. And this one looks really cute and weird and funny, and like, this is pretty much, quite honestly, it feels like this is they've carved out a niche in a way, which is there are these things that go bump in the night that seem really weird, but they're actually kind of friendly. And yeah, they're not pretty, but they're relatable, and you should be nice to them. Like, don't be afraid of the dark, and we can, even though the dark is weird. And I like that. They're making weird films, but they're like films that aren't softened, which I like.
For sure.
So, and also they're also beautiful movies as well. They're just gorgeous. Equalizer, I don't know.
I'll see it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Sony is really hot on it. They think it's going to be huge.
They are. I saw the trailer, though, and I was like, someone saw Taken. Like, it just feels like nowadays the thing to do is to take, you know, a big movie. Well, it doesn't have to necessarily be a big movie star, but an actor who's middle-aged to late middle-aged and put him in a, you know, hero saves all scenario.
Yeah, but here's the thing. With Liam Neeson, it felt fresh and surprising because he had never really done those films before. Denzel Washington has done so many action movies. Like,
What I'm saying is this just feels like a cash-in on that kind of thing. There's like,
with the hopes of giving him his own franchise.
And something not near as interesting as Man on Fire.
Right. And I will also say that Antoine Fuqua has never... the fact that they're still trying to cash in on Training Day says a lot. Training Day was a long time ago. I understand that Olympus Has Fallen was a hit, but I've never really been that up on Antoine Fuqua. So, but he's a hot director, man. He's getting offered everything.
He really is, yeah.
Good for him and his agent.
Sure.
Then there's this movie on October 3rd called Gone Girl. I don't know much about it. Moving on.
I'm so excited for Gone Girl.
Me too.
It keeps like each new piece of marketing that comes out for Gone Girl and Foxcatcher like moves that to like, no, that's my most anticipated of the year. No, that's my most anticipated of the year. Like, both look so good.
They really do. It's a neck and neck thing.
Yeah. David Fincher, October. It's
October.
Gonna be great.
Yeah.
I am curious to see if Fox is going for awards-y NIST with Gone Girl, or if Fincher is just kind of doing it.
I think they'll, quite honestly, I'm wondering if they might, I don't think they're going to take it to festivals. It doesn't feel like a festival movie. Huh.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't know what it's going to be. The book is kind of like a mystery thriller, but I could easily see Fincher throwing the mystery on the back burner and just doing a Portrait of a Marriage straightforward drama.
Yeah,
that's
but
really
like
twisted, sick, and crazy.
No, I mean, I can see that too, but it's like his films just haven't gone to festivals.
Sure.
Like
in
the past. And that's the reason. If they, I mean, it's the studio's prerogative if they want to take it to festivals. I don't really know what to expect. If they want to bring it to TIFF, I would be amenable to that. I would have no problem with it. But we'll see. It'll be interesting. And I think in terms of an awards push, they'll sort of test the water. And they have time to do so, as opposed to Sony with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And it's like, we put these eggs in this basket, and we got to carry the basket now for a film that didn't really receive that much of a reception. So, I mean, it got some awards nominations, but it was nowhere near what they were hoping it would be.
Yeah.
Moving on. Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day looks like a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad movie.
and I say that as someone who really liked the book as a kid, but it looks like one of those things where, you know how Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs was kind of brilliant because it took a very thin book and made it into a great movie? Because most of the time, those really thin children's books don't make good movie. This is Exhibit B. This is, you took a very thin premise and it's going to be like a wacky family comedy with Jennifer Garner and Steve Carell. And it's just like, this is the Steve Carell movie. Thankfully for Steve Carell, this movie is opening before Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
If he's going to build awards buzz. That's what I'm saying. It could, I mean, all of these is like, maybe they're good. It's just, this is the whole thing with looking ahead. And we did this at the beginning of the year. We're looking ahead and we're trying to read tea leaves and we have, you know, what we've, you know, we're going on what we've seen so far. So The Interview, which comes out the same day on October 10th, looks funny. You know, it looks, you know, and again, like Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen seem to have found a niche for how much a movie can cost. And, the kind of comedy they want to do, and, you know, piss off North Korea. What, whatever. Maybe North Korea will nuke someone over it, but you can't really predict North Korea. Sort of wondering what they're going to do. But and the film itself looks very funny.
It looks really funny. I think it just looks nuts. And again, like I said, I think they found their niche of, you know, keeping the budget small and doing whatever the hell they want to do. And this is, it feels like it's more ambitious than This Is the End, and This Is the End was hella ambitious, so I'm very excited to see what they do.
Yeah. Moving on, a film that I think is kind of flying under the radar at the moment, but I'm interested in, is Book of Life, which was produced by Guillermo del Toro and has a very Mexican Day of the Dead look to it.
Yeah.
So, just from an animation standpoint, I think it looks gorgeous, and hopefully the story is strong too. So, that's what I'm gonna, I think it's flying under the radar right now, but I'm gonna keep an eye on it. Opening in limited release on Friday, on October 17th, is Birdman, which I really like. That looks like a festival movie. That looks like something you bring to fall festivals to build buzz, and I think it looks awesome.
It looks incredible. And throw in the fact that it's shot to look like it's one continuous shot, and I am so excited. I think this is going to be a big awards contender.
It could be, and I say that as someone who has not been up on Iñárritu's movies since Amores Perros. But this looks different than what he's done before. It's not that sort of we're all connected, which is 21 Grams and Babel, and then I didn't even care about his follow-ups until now. Plus, it's Keaton, Michael Keaton. I'll just see anything with Michael Keaton. I'm just such a fan, and the fact that this is kind of a play on him playing Batman in the 1980s makes it even more fun, I think. So that, or more intriguing. Moving on, Kingsman. I want to be more excited for it than I am.
Yes, here. I was expecting to be blown away by the first trailer, but it didn't really show much. But maybe there's a lot more that we haven't seen.
True. I'm a Matthew Vaughn fan.
Yeah, same.
So he sort of earned the benefit of the doubt for me as someone who can even make a Mark Miller source material into a good movie. And which isn't easy.
No.
Okay, moving on to November. By the way, stop me if you want to talk about like Paranormal Activity 5 or anything else.
I really don't. St. Vincent looks fine. They just released a trailer for that with Melissa McCarthy and Bill Murray. It was an April release and they pushed it to September or October. So I assume they see some awards prospects in it of some sort, but we'll see. It's tough to tell from the trailer. It could be, you know, schmaltzy dramedy stuff, or it could be genuinely good.
True that. Okay, so moving on to November, shit's getting interesting. Same day, Big Hero 6 and Interstellar, which both look interesting. We haven't seen enough of either yet. Again, we're now reaching November. But what I've seen so far from both films looks interesting.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to Interstellar. I think that's interesting that they're both opening on the same day, because either one of those feel like major box office, you know.
Someone could blink, but you're saying, like, who should? They both look like they could be huge.
Yeah, but Big Hero 6 feels like the more risky of the two, because it's a superhero kind of a weird adaptation, not a straightforward animated movie. And as we saw earlier this year with How to Train Your Dragon 2, animation isn't always a slam dunk. That movie is in lockstep box office wise with 22 Jump Street, which
Right.
Amazing. I mean, considering both films, because you have an R-rated comedy overperforming and then an animated should be slam dunk underperforming.
Well, the other thing about it is, if you move, like, where do these movies even move to?
Yeah.
At this point, you're running out of space. I can see Big Hero 6, like, opening 2 days earlier. Like, they'll push it to the 5th.
Yeah. Nobody wants to go any later because you want to stay the hell away from Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you do. Unless you're some movie, a sports drama called McFarland. Yeah.
Apparently, they feel fine.
No, they're like, we'll just get all that leftover stuff.
Yeah,
as if no one could go see, as if no one could go see Big Hero 6, Interstellar, Dumb and Dumber 2, or Fury.
I think Fury looks great. I'm not sold on Dumb and Dumber 2. I'm gonna see it, but the thing is, I don't feel like it's any problem with the filmmakers. It looks like the same movie as the first one, but it's been 20 years since I saw the first one. I had a very different sense of humor back then. I still think it's funny now because I have an emotional attachment to it. But
right, you know, I laughed a lot at the trailer.
Yeah,
so,
and I always love.
But we just
Jim
know
Carrey.
That comedy sequels are rough. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I love seeing Jim Carrey just going balls to the wall crazy. So. I think it'll be an enjoyable experience, even though I think it's inevitable that it's going to be a letdown for most people.
True. I'm hoping... Here's the thing. I like seeing Jim Carrey do that as well, but considering all the dignified roles Jeff Daniels has done of late, to see him go back to that role, I think is going to be a lot of fun.
For sure.
And
Foxcatcher opens in limited release that weekend, which just looks fantastic.
Sony is pushing hard
for awards for Channing Tatum now, which I don't think they expected because all the buzz pre-Cannes was Steve Carell, and then it premiered at Cannes, and everyone was like, yes, Steve Carell's incredible, but also Channing Tatum's fantastic. And so after
that...
And
Mark Ruffalo. Like, they're like, it's a triple threat.
Yeah, and Ruffalo. But after that, the first poster for Foxcatcher, the only person on it is Channing Tatum. The first trailer that is all Channing Tatum-centric, so...
Yeah, but he's also the big sell. He's the one that's going to sell it to... Because Steve Carell, like, yeah, he's pop, but he's, like, under makeup, and he's talking really weird.
Sure.
Channing Tatum is so hot right now.
He's going to put asses in seats.
He's going to get the ladies. He's going to get the ladies to show up to a bizarre murder drama.
That Hansel is so hot right now.
Hansel, so hot right now. Man, the Channing Tatum, man, talk about turning around on an actor, because...
Oh, yeah.
Really? I mean, in more power, I hear he's a super nice dude, so that helps. Not that that's necessary, but... So, in Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1 will show up. I'm concerned about that film because the source material gets so weak at Mockingjay.
Sure, but after Catching Fire, that whole team has earned the benefit of the doubt for me, so I am optimistic about it, because I was not optimistic about Catching Fire. I was like, Francis Lawrence, you know, whatever. But I felt like they elevated that source material so much. And I like Catching Fire. It's probably my favorite book of the trilogy. But I'm excited to see what they do with Mockingjay, because I feel like that team is just, they've honed it in, and I feel like they've hit a really good adaptation there. So
yeah, I'm not dreading it like I'm dreading Insurgent, but I have more questions, let's put it that way, about Mockingjay Part 1.
Sure.
So we'll see. Horrible Bosses 2. Look, I got a laugh out of it.
It had a poop joke, so of course you had a laugh out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I also like the joke where, like, they're walking in slow motion.
Yeah. No, I think it's...
It looked silly, and they didn't even show us Christoph Waltz or Chris Pine in that trailer.
Uh-uh.
So I'm interested to see how they'll be in the film. So yeah, that one's interesting. Penguins of Madagascar, I've always enjoyed those characters. I didn't know this was coming out. I thought there is a Penguins of Madagascar direct-to-DVD film, right? I think there might be.
I'm sure there is.
But this is a theatrical one, and I laughed a lot at the trailer with the Cheeto joke. The cheese puff joke.
That was good.
That slayed me.
That was a good joke.
So I'm not a big fan of the Madagascar series, but I like those characters. So if we're going to talk about DreamWorks animation films that aren't How to Train Your Dragon 2, I could go in for that, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's some film called The Pyramid, which is a horror film, on December 5th.
I just tried to look it up. I have no idea what it is. I don't think Fox has released anything on it yet.
Yeah, that feels like one of those films that'll just get kicked back to January.
Yeah.
Like, it's placeholding and... Then again, its only competition that week is Wild.
Which could be interesting. that's director of Dallas Buyers Club and Reese Witherspoon doing drama, which I thought she was good in Mud. So
sure. Exodus, which I am not that up on. Exodus, Gods and Kings. That's it. That's the full title.
Yeah, Exodus, Gods and Kings. I like Kingdom of Heaven. I am.
I like the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah, yeah. So again, yeah, I'm enthused by the prospect of Ridley Scott tackling another like period epic, but he seems very keen on just pushing over to whatever the studio wants for the theatrical release and then putting what he likes on the DVD, which is weird, but.
Yeah, it's a weird way to make movies.
It is a weird way to make movies. And it also is a very whitewashed story, as Devin pointed out on Baddest Digest this week, that the cast is all white.
All white? Yes. Yeah, that sort of struck me as well. also, but it's not just that it's all white. It's also like the first image is, I guess, one of the new images is Moses like with a sword on a horse.
Yeah,
it's like this is a different Moses. I don't really need
we'll
a warrior. I don't really need a warrior Moses, but show me what you're going for, Ridley Scorch.
Sure.
Inherent Vice, that's definitely one of the most anticipated of the year for me.
Can't wait to see a trailer for that.
For sure. Annie.
Not too crazy about it.
Trailers really haven't blown me away, but you know, Will Gluck, I do like Easy A.
Yeah, Will Gluck, both of his last two movies, his past two movies, Easy A and Friends with Benefits, I both thought looked stupid or wasn't really crazy about them, and then really liked them when I saw them, even Friends with Benefits. His one, like, main problem is just kind of pop culture overload, and I kind of feel that in the Annie trailer. And also it just feels like an unnecessary remake. The Annie musical isn't really it's not great.
Sure.
It's
but I like the fact it's not that great of a musical, but I think it's a good sort of vehicle for Kevanjane Wallace.
Yeah. Kevanjane.
Yes. I think it could be good. I like the fact I think it could be interesting. Let me put it this way. And I'm glad that she got the role as opposed to Will Smith's daughter. Mm-hmm. Although she didn't want to do it anyway. She's like, I don't want to do music, Daddy. And he's like, fine. Jaden, go type some more crazy shit on Twitter. The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies, or let's just finish this goddamn thing.
It's done.
Let's finish this goddamn disappointment and just forget about it.
You know it's going to be like 3 hours.
Of course it's going to be 3 hours. And then there will be an extended edition. That's 18 hours.
Which I was totally fine with on the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And the one thing I am really curious about Battle of the Five Armies is seeing how he bridges the gap between the Hobbit trilogy and the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
True. So there's something to be interested in there.
There's something to look forward to there.
There's a new Cameron Crowe film. I wish I could be more excited for that than I am. But
I love Cameron Crowe.
See, We Bought a Zoo, I did not think was good.
I thought it was fine. It was a perfectly pleasant, nice movie.
Okay.
If this movie in December really is a like redone version of Hot Tiki, it's gonna be weird. So
sure.
I'm looking forward to it.
Wait, a remake of what film?
He wrote a script called Deep Tiki years ago for Ben Stiller and Reese Witherspoon, which was kind of like a Joe versus the Volcano story. And it takes place in Hawaii. It deals with like a pilot and like a nuclear testing facility, but it has like a supernatural aspect, like the volcano came alive or something. And this is supposedly a reworked version of that script. So that's what makes me, I'm very curious to see if it's supernatural in nature.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So we're
and I like
Christmas.
Emma Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Emma Stone. We're at Christmas now, people. And this is where separates the boys from the men. Hot Tub Time Machine 2 will be that movie that gets crushed. I can't believe they came up with like I liked the first Hot Tub Time Machine, but I can't believe it got a sequel. And
me neither.
The fact that it's coming out on Christmas Day seems ill-advised at best.
Yes. But Rob Corddry in an interview recently said the sequel was made for like no money, so they just did some just crazy stuff.
Yeah, and that's great, but there's like a perfectly vacant January. That's that's where you should
maybe it's a Christmas-themed sequel, Matt. We don't know. And Adam Scott is in it, which is fantastic news.
No, look, again, I want to see it. I'm just saying when the box office numbers come in.
Who's seeing it on Christmas?
Exactly.
And I would now, be shocked if it gets moved around as we get closer to it.
Now, the movie that, and we talked about this a little earlier this week, Into the Woods. Ooh, this could go either way.
It really could.
It's great source material, fantastic musical. Meryl Streep, that's interesting.
Emily Blunt. Singing, that's fantastic.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, doing all right. That's kind
and
of
then
okay.
Rob Marshall, who I love Chicago, but don't like Nine at all.
I feel like Chicago then, is more Bill Condon than Rob Marshall.
No, I disagree with that. Visually, Chicago is stunning. It is
stunning, but I feel like it's more Bill Condon's influence.
I think Bill Condon did a great job turning the script to a like he. It's really well paced, but I think visually, I think in terms of, I think it's really creative in certain ways, like sort of interjecting a tap dance into the middle of sort of the closing Richard Gere's closing statements. I think it's fun. I think it's thoughtful. I think it was a film that made me really excited for Rob Marshall as a filmmaker. And then, you know, his last one was Pirates on Stranger Tides, which is just a disaster.
Yeah.
It's not even, like, I understand they had less money and they had to restart the story, basically, and Johnny Depp had more power now, but it's a mess. It's just a mess. And so I don't know about Into the Woods. I could be fantastic or it could be awful. That to me is like,
yeah.
I just don't see
I'm waiting
it
for that
in,
first
any
trailer.
In between. Yeah.
I'm really curious.
I don't know. I feel like the trailers could be good too. Or, you know, yeah, that's. We'll see.
But
then there's Paddington.
Yeah. Then there's Paddington.
I'm sorry. Which looks like crap. It's just like fucking.
Even Colin Firth left it.
Even Colin Firth. Look, I'm not someone who's like. We said this earlier. Like, there's some things where Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's like, I liked it as a kid. I'm indifferent to what you're doing it now. Paddington, I liked as a kid, and it's not that like, oh, I'm still a diehard Paddington Bear fan, but it's just cute and nice, and it's something you want to share with a new generation, and you're like, why are you turning this into Yogi Bear? You know?
See, I wasn't as down on the trailer as you were. I thought it looked all right, so we'll see. I like David Heyman as a producer.
Yeah.
you just weren't crazy about it. It was a very brief teaser trailer. We'll see.
It's just what they're trying to highlight. I think they could. Excuse me.
It
I thought
made
they could
me
highlight
laugh.
It. Well, then, it looks like I'm not the only one with the immature sense of humor. Am I, Adam?
Hey, at least it's not poop jokes that get me going.
That's true. And then there's Unbroken, which looks like let's get some awards. Let's do that upright.
Yeah. It also
I hope
be
that,
really, really good.
It could be really, really good. And I hope that I'm excited for it because of Jack O'Connell, who I've really liked in a film called Start Up. And so this is like him in the lead role, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to do with it. I also heard he's great in this movie called 71, which screened at the Berlin Film Festival. Mm-hmm. So I think Angelina Jolie is what's going to draw people. Like the success of the book that it's based on and having Jolie as the director is going to draw in more media attention. But I hope some of it also lands on Jack O'Connell, assuming he's good in the film, and I have no reason to believe he wouldn't be.
Sure. See, I'm really excited for it because it's a female director, which is such an oddity these days that a female gets this massive studio film in, you know, then the heart of award season. And I think that is meaningful, and I hope that she does a fantastic job. And I know she pitched herself really, really hard to get to direct this. And so I'm very much looking forward to it because women aren't allowed to direct studio movies. They just don't get the chance to do it, and it's annoying.
No, they do not.
And terrible.
And as long as you're Angelina Jolie and a huge box office star and world-renowned actress.
It's still one.
No, it's still an accomplishment. No, I'm not degrading it. I'm just, to me, what I'm saying is that's such an unfair bar to set for all other female directors.
Sure.
And the fact that fact that she had to even scrap for it. Now, I understand that she only has one other directing credit to her name, but still, like, it's one of those things, like, I'm with you. I'm glad from just the perspective of, like, a female director for a huge possible Oscar contender.
Yeah.
That's good. Big Eyes. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Tim Burton to possibly make a real movie again.
I am too. I really, really am. I'm looking forward to that, for Tim Burton to make a real movie again.
It could be a real movie. Yeah. Like, not just, like, yeah, like, all of his movies are adaptations. I understand, except, like, they weren't at the beginning of his career, but now they are. But this has a really interesting story. It has Amy Adams and Christoph Waltz. It's a good, interesting story. So maybe, you know, fingers crossed, it's like, give me something along the lines of Ed Wood or Big Fish or something, for God's sakes. Something yeah. with an emotional pulse, not
yes.
goddamn Dark Shadows.
That was real bad.
It was really bad.
Or just soulless Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's just... And then Selma, which...
Could
has
be good.
A good cast.
Another female director.
Another female director. To me, it's like, what's notable about it is like the first really, I mean, notable depiction of Martin Luther King Jr. on screen.
Yeah.
Like, so many films have dodged that, because the King estate is very careful with it as well, except when it comes to using him to sell cell phone plans. I don't know if you ever saw those commercials, but like they used his like "I Have a Dream" speech, and then it was like just for like AT&T or some shit, and I was like, that is the worst.
Yeah.
But this is like David Oyelowo, who's starring. He's a really good actor.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And I hope at the very least this gets more attention on him. So yeah. And then Oprah, I'm sure, will plug the hell out of it, because she's in the film and she's also a producer. So yeah, that is your year. This show ran very long, but there's a lot to... We're covering an entire goddamn year, people. We covered what was and what will be. But I'm still in it. Like, that's the thing. I think there's good stuff to be excited for. I know 2015 is, like, the apocalypse. And by the way, folks, we're going to Comic-Con in a few weeks.
Yeah.
God help us. But you know what the good thing about Comic-Con is, that you and I have been bitching about it since last year's Comic-Con, and I hope that we just have it out of our systems by the time we show up there. It's just like, whatever, let's do this thing. By the way, to the people who listen to this podcast, and I've met a lot of... I don't know if you've met people who are like, man, I would love to go to Comic-Con. And I think that's a... I'm not trying to shit on that. I'm not trying to be like, man, I'm not trying to be overprivileged about it. It's just... Please keep in mind that we're there to do a certain job and a certain task, and it's exhausting. We're not, like, just chilling out around the con. So that's the thing. Like, I'm not trying to, like, beat down on Comic-Con, just I've been doing it for 7 years. Adam, you've been doing it for what, 4 years?
3 years. This will be my third time, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So you understand, though.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to, like, be... Like, I don't mean to be disrespectful of people that want to go to Comic-Con. I think... It's a good thing to do at least once, but we're in for a very big 2015, a very big 2015, and there could be exciting stuff there. We'll find out, but let's not look ahead to the next fucking year. Let's enjoy 2014 while we can. Adam, do you want to do any recommendations? Do you have anything? Because I have... Do you want to point out anything? Sundance film, maybe, that people should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, I would say I Origins comes out later this year, and I really loved that.
I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, I really loved it. Don't watch the trailer. Don't learn anything about it, but go see it. I'd highly recommend that. And then just Locke. If you miss Locke, see it. It's great. It's fantastic.
See it for the concrete.
Yes, see it for the concrete.
My recommendation is Calvary, which comes out on August 1st. I love this film when I saw it at Sundance. It's from the same director as The Guard, and it also stars Brendan Gleeson. He plays a priest in a small village, and at the beginning of the film, he's taking confession, and the person he's taking confession from says that he was molested as a child by a priest, but now that priest is dead. So instead, he's going to kill Brendan Gleeson's character to prove a point. And so the film... But he's going to give him a week to get his affairs in order. So it's this film that's about faith, sins, and reckoning. and it does so in a very mature way, but not in a downer way. It still has some comedy. It's beautifully shot, amazing performances. It's really just a terrific film that's very mature. It really hits like with a gut punch, but I thought it was definitely one of the more mature explorations of faith I've seen in quite some time. So I would recommend Calvary. Okay, folks, thank you for listening to this extended episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.